Today's episode is brought to you by Healthy Male. Just about every man over the age of 25 has experienced some sort of erectile dysfunction issue, and for some, it's more than just occasional. Guys, now you can avoid the time and embarrassment of going to the doctor and getting ED drugs like Viagra or Cialis by just calling Healthy Male. HealthyMale.com has been around helping men discreetly for over 20 years and have prescribed almost 3 million prescriptions online. There's no need to visit your local gas station and buy some phony snake oil treatment that has zero chance of making any difference.
Yeah, I don't want to use that.
Mm-hmm. You don't know what kind of stuff you're putting in your blood. You're going to be waking up at night with the hives. Most orders are shipped in a day with discreet packaging right to wherever you are, home, office, hotel, vacation destination, or even FedEx pickup location. The best part, unlike most companies online, there's no subscription service that you have to cancel. HealthyMail.com will only ship your pills when you order them and will never automatically charge your card monthly.
Y'all know y'all be forgetting.
Right now, Healthy Mail is offering to our listeners 20 pills for $49, and that includes a doctor's prescription and free shipping. You can order online at www.healthymail.com or just call 1-877-4-VIAGRA. That's 1-877-4-VIAGRA, and be sure to mention our offer code TBGWT to get the 20 pills for $49. Requests for medication are not guaranteed and must be approved by a U.S. licensed physician. So call 1-877-4-VIAGRA to see if you are eligible and avoid the doctor visits for your ED once and for all. Mention our offer code TBGWT.
I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
Ida May didn't take it personally when people and pointed these things out to her, like the neighbor lady who had brought the wine. Ida Mae wouldn't likely have seen her again because the family moved so much in those early months in Chicago, but she thanked people like her and the lady who mentioned her headscarf on the bus one day. She was grateful for the advice, in fact took most of it, but there were some things she was not ever going to do. She was never going to change her name to something citified and highfalutin. She was never going to take on northern airs and name drop about the pastor she knew from this or that church or the alderman who stopped to greet her at the polls, even though she would come to know famous people who made good up in the north because she had known their kin, people back in Mississippi. She was never going to forget the folks back home and how she loved them so. She was never going to change her Mississippi drawl, not in the least. Not even after she had spent more of her life in the North than in the South. Not even when some Northerners still had trouble understanding her decades after she'd been there. Though she wasn't trying to be difficult and was just being herself. She simply didn't care what anybody thought. It didn't matter. Because people seemed to love her for it. She decided to keep things that made her feel like home deep within herself, where nobody could judge her. And inside the walls of their kitchenette apartment where she made turnip greens and peach cobbler and sweet potato pie, flecked with nutmeg and sang spirituals like in Mississippi as often as she liked. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast with your hosts, Rod and
Karen.
And we're live on a Sunday, ready to do some podcasting. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Leave us 5-star reviews. Thank you. We appreciate you. It's better than a Christmas present, guys. 5-star review. If you haven't left one, go leave us one on iTunes or Stitcher.
The best kind of 5.
We love reading those. We love, we do so much, and we love hearing back from you guys about how it makes you feel and what you think about it. The official weapon of the show is
the taser
and the unofficial sport
football
and bullet ball extreme. So yeah, you guys can go ahead and check out all of that stuff. Today's excerpt is from The Warmth of Other Suns, which we've been talking about a bit on the show lately, by Isabel Wilkerson. And that part was about Ida May, who, you know, obviously one of the three migrants that the story really follows. How when you get to Chicago and these big cities, there's this divide because you have these black folks who've been there already, some of them for a generation, some of them for shorter, and then you have them resenting the new black folks. And so in the newspaper, like the Chicago Defender used to have take it upon itself to like teach the black people about how to act in the city, because these are unsophisticated southern people coming up that had not necessarily had the privileges and the access to a bunch of stuff that, you know, city northern black folks had, you know.
Okay.
Things such as just the way they were able to dress, having, because you gotta remember, people coming in who haven't been able to have a job, who haven't been able
okay, that's true,
to make a profit.
Yeah, some of them never had proper clothing before, right?
Some of them literally were fleeing from the South, mm-hmm. under the fact that sharecroppers were looking for them. And the sharecroppers would not allow you to make a profit. Many times they just barely let you make even, or they just keep you in debt perpetually so that you're essentially still a slave. So sometimes people fled from the South, and you coming up there and you're not sophisticated. And this is a time where, I mean, still nothing changed, but, you know, black people felt like we have to be respectable, because at the time there really weren't many other avenues for black people. Like, what a lot of people don't talk about is that our pushback on respectability politics is literally because of our ancestors push forward, and it's protection. And now we actually have the privilege to be the anti-respectable, blah, 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 and still be relatively safe. There was a time when you could be anti-respectable and you were immediately going to be killed, period. Like, you go in there and you talk to some white man a certain way, or you look at some white woman a certain way. There wasn't an option of, y'all just some scared Negroes. It was like, okay, well, then you're going to be dead. Those are the only two options: appear to be scared or die. You know, appear to be, quote, civilized or die. So anyway, even in the papers, they had like a list of do's and don'ts. Like, this is one of the lists: don't hang out the windows, don't sit around in the yard and on the porch barefoot and unkempt. Keep in mind, these are the same newspapers that told black people to come north. So, like, you know, you get the Chicago Defender, you're somewhere in fucking Macon, Georgia or whatever, and they're like, listen, you dealing with a lot of oppression, slavery, da da da, Jim Crow, come north. There's no Jim Crow up here, blah blah. Well, you get up there, one, there's still racism there, clearly. And then you have these black people that now have to take on almost a role of mentoring you, because they're like, oh no, it's not like the South, you have to wear like shoes here.
Right.
You know, because there were black people that lived their whole lives without shoes.
Right.
In certain areas of the country, because one, they were not allowed to have money to buy shoes.
Correct.
And then two, what do I need shoes for? You know, all I'm doing is going out in the field and picking cotton and playing, you know, living in a shotgun shack on somebody's land. Like, I'm not really, I don't have this life where I get to have these imaginations and imaginings of things that we consider to be comforts, would be luxuries for them. So yeah, don't wear handkerchiefs on your head, don't use vile language in public places, don't allow children to beg on the streets, don't appear on the street with old dust caps, dirty aprons, and ragged clothes.
What's a dust cap?
Probably, I don't know, just something to probably go on your head. Keep the dust out, maybe. Don't throw garbage in the backyard or alley, or keep dirty front yards. The Chicago Urban League, which helped direct migrants to temporary shelter, rental options, and jobs, was the closest the migrants got to customs in the North. And they had stranger meetings, and this is where they take everybody coming in, like new black people coming into town that new don't know anybody, and having them basically build networking between each other. And then they also give you some advice on do's and don'ts, things they don't want you to do. Do not loaf, get a job at once. Do not live in crowded rooms, others can be obtained. Do not carry on loud conversations in streetcars or public places. Do not keep your children out of school, and do not send for your family until you get a job. And so obviously reading these things now, it's like, how dare they, you know?
But at the time, but in this context, I yeah. under I still bristle, but I understand, you know.
They were trying to help, and this was correct. Literally life and death for some people.
Right.
Because some of these mistakes were fatal. You send mm-hmm. for your family before you even have a job, and you find out you can't afford to have your family up here. All y'all gonna starve. Right. What y'all gonna do now? But then also, there was resentment from people who had been up north, and we still feel it to this day, you know. Whenever,
yes, we do.
Whenever somebody will complain about it, happens rarely now because we've established who we are and what we do. Mm-hmm. But when people write and they will complain about your accent or something like that, and it's like, oh, that's still that anti-blackness deep inside of you. You haven't considered it, because there's something about a black woman having a country accent that's somehow real way worse than anything else. It's the worst thing in the world. But Paula Deen made a fucking empire with that country ass accent.
A whole fucking empire.
You know, y'all got Paula Deen dishes, but somehow Karen needs to, it's too embarrassing to some people. And it's like, that type of thing is what I thought about when I read that passage about Ida Mae and how, people would, it goes against all the stuff that they told her, and it goes against what most people tried to do when they got to the north. You start trying to accentify, you start trying to talk in a different accent, you want to blend in, and you want to be as far away from your southern self as you were, you know, as you could be, because you knew that southern self was an oppressed self, a person that could not look a white person in the eyes, a person that had to call every white woman and man sir and ma'am, you know, that type of, so you were running away from that. So you hop off that train, and then you become, you push yourself to be somebody that you're not, almost, right?
Right. And I think that's my biggest thing. Like you say, even to today, it's a divide. I think some people have relaxed, but a lot of people haven't, particularly when news comes out. It's a subsection of black people, particularly a lot of black people up north, that have this philosophy or mentality that everybody down a lot, and some of them have never fucking been to the South, and just keep this real, some of them have, a lot of them haven't. They have this sweeping philosophy of what they think the South is versus what the South really is. You know, they make the assumptions that we're slow and we're dumb and we're ignorant, and everybody down here is country bumpkins, and that y'all talk slow, and you know, and how we dress and things like that. And it's very frustrating, because I am of the fact that y'all still deal with the same shit we deal with down here. It's very different, because of just the culture, but you still deal with the same things in different formats, you know what I'm saying? Because my thing is, as long as I'm speaking English and you can understand me, who gives a goddamn how fucking slow I speak or how my drawl is? You can understand, and it's kind of a way for them to still poke fun, you know. But at the same time, I bet you go back in your lineage, go back in your history, your folks came from Mississippi and Texas and fucking North Carolina, and when their asses got up there, they talk fucking just like me. So it's like one of those things.
Well, some of them did, and then they lost it, or they changed it to acclimate to their surroundings. The other thing too, though, is I love this around this chapter in the book. They also talk about, because one of the men was George. He was a person that worked on the railroad trains, and passenger trains, ones that took people from the South to the North. Which, of course, during the Great Migration, a lot of black people were coming from the North to the South to visit after they had established themselves, and a lot of people were coming from the, you know, obviously from the South up to the North to get the fuck out of the South. Well, the ones coming from the North to the South after they established themselves, he said, he made a point of, like, when they got on the train, their luggage would be light, it'd be almost empty, and when it came back, it'd be almost too heavy to carry. And the point was, they were going home for the things they missed. So they were taking back the food. They were taking back, you know, like they were, and I think there's something to me that's beautiful about it, because there's this symbiosis between black people that just doesn't get, because we're so concentrated on where we're divided, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I bring up the stuff about the North and the rules and stuff, and I felt you get a little bit, like, defensive almost, right? It made you somewhat upset. Because there is a division of people that, you know, look down on us in the South, you mm-hmm. know, but they come from here. But something about them going, like, Because another thing that black people used to do, they used to send money home they couldn't afford.
Mm-hmm.
To make it, like, they go to the north, they can finally get paid for the first time in their lives, and they're sending more money home than they should, partially to, and this is so deep to me, partially, you know, because they wanted people to feel like they were doing well.
Right.
But also, partially, it was an advertisement, like, come join me. Because a lot of people weren't leaving because they were scared.
Agreed.
Because, you know, this is why when... You know, we make the joke, but when people say stuff like I am my ancestors' wildest dreams, you are.
Yeah, you really
you know,
are.
Too many people make light of that, and that's because we have the privilege to make light of that now. But your ancestors' wildest dreams weren't all these revolutionary
woke dreams.
They weren't all that. Lot of them was like, I would like a child to be able to go to college. I would like a child that can afford to, like, make a living. I would just like to not be a fucking slave. It doesn't mean I want to go on to be an astronaut, but, you know, just I like some shoes, you know, shit
right.
like that.
I like a child to be able to read. I would like for my family to be safe. I would like for my family to have a home.
Right.
You know, just simple stuff. I would like for them to be able to afford food. You know, just the simple things. The vote. I mean,
right. So when you hear the wildest dreams, some people take it for granted, you know, but voting was people's wildest dreams,
right,
in some cases. You know, Ida May in the book talks about how the first time she voted and how she lived her whole life in the South, even with violent politicians who were, like, promoting killing black people, killing them. Even with that, she never was inclined to vote or think about politics while living amongst that. Because it just wasn't allowed for them. And if you did get to the polls, you got some stupid ass question, mm-hmm, that you probably can't, with no answer. How many stars are there in the sky? Oh, you don't know. There's no right answer. And
right.
So then they go, well, black, you can't vote. You're too stupid. You know, and they won't let a black person vote. So she just was like, why would I care about that? You know? So yes, black people voting literally is some people's wildest fucking dreams. I know it's hard to imagine because we've taken it for granted our entire fucking lives,
right.
But you know, when you hear people say shit like, you know, it don't mean nothing, or if you don't feel like voting, don't worry about it, the reason that shit pisses me off is because it's like, well, that's not, you know, why are you trying to guilt me? My ancestors didn't die for me to vote. They actually really fucking did. And you don't have to be ahistorical to disagree. You can be like, I don't care that they died. You can say that.
Right, but people don't want to say that.
Right, but that sounds too cold, right? But the truth is, many of them did die. Many of them never even dreamed of voting because that wasn't allowed for them to be a realistic option. So, all that stuff to say, like, there's a beauty in the fact that there was this commerce and this relationship and communication between black people from the north and the south, but at the same time, I think we more concentrate on the divide, you know, between the north and the south, and to be like, well, black people from the north think they this, that, and the other, and black people from the south always get to deal with this judgment and the shame and all this stuff. And you know, us being from down here, it's easy for us to just harp on that part, but there's black people from the north that understand that relationship, and some of the stuff that seems paternalistic and condescending, I guess is the best way to put it,
mm-hmm,
was also stuff that they said because they cared about us.
That's true. So like I said, we was talking earlier yesterday, like I said, I had to understand and get a better understanding of when somebody says phrases and words like the piece you just read, you have to think in context. Nowadays, people are like, the fuck is this? But in context, it completely made sense. Like, okay, I understand it. But at the same time, you can't help but feel like, oh, y'all don't want me to be who I really am. You want me to conform and change into this system, but you doing this to keep me alive. That, like that piece, I understand. But that same philosophy still goes on to today. When you go, nigga, it's irrelevant today. Not all irrelevant, but pieces of it is irrelevant today.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a complicated situation when you're navigating white supremacy.
Right.
Because some of the shit is to protect you.
Correct.
You know, some of the shit your parents tell you, some of the shit that people from other cities and stuff would tell you, like, hey, this need how you need to conduct yourself over here, is literally them telling you what I had to do to navigate this situation. And then some of it comes from a bad place. Some of it is them being like, you embarrassing us as black people by coming in here with your dirty da 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 da. And you know, that's not good, you know. So it's a complicated thing, but I think leaning into that complexity and trying to fully understand it is more important than, you know, kind of shitting on one side or the other.
Right. And also the thing too that you brought up, and the one thing that I being down here, one thing I do love is that even me and my family to come down here, and they will buy like grits and liver mush, like and certain type of sausages and shit that they can't get where they are. And they was like, we can't purchase that here, so I'm gonna buy all of it up that I can here, you know, to take it back with me. And that's almost like a tradition. And you know, I've been up there and they have foods and shit that I've never heard of in my life, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely delicious. So it's actually like we actually can learn from each other. And so that's kind of where I am right now, particularly anywhere I travel, period, but particularly when you're dealing with up north and up south, down south, it's just a difference in culture. And not to get off topic, but even in rap, it's a cultural difference between the north and the south, because you know, the south had cars, up north they don't have cars, you know, most people drive. And so just the way
certain cities,
right, some of your major cities, not everybody, but some of your major cities. And so when I'm saying up north, I'm talking about New York City,
you know
places like that, where you have massive transportation. It's different than down here. So even with that, you know years ago you used to see the divide in that also stems all the way back to here, where we're up north, this is our life, this is what we rap about. We're down south, this is our life, this is what we rap about. Like I said, in order versus seeing what we have in common, it was that divide.
Yeah. And the other thing I liked about that passage was just Ida Mae and the way she comported herself. It kind of reminds me of you, how you're like unapologetically yourself in so many situations that you know, there is no like, let me code switch for this situation, or let me tamp down myself for this situation. And it's funny because on paper it's all the things that all these sadiddy ass black folks will feel embarrassed by, or should feel, you know, insecure about, right? Like, but in life it's always been the opposite. People like glom onto you, people love you, you're everybody's fave, all this stuff. In real life it's like, oh my god, here she comes. And I think it's because you are so accepting and unapologetic about being yourself in all these different situations and different rooms, that I think people are attracted to it, because it does become like a constant fixture, and people don't feel like, oh, this person's bullshitting me,
right?
Or this person is you know, like I'm meeting their representative or whatever, you know. And I think that when I read that about Ida Mae, I was like, yeah, I've seen that happen in real life, where it's like, you know, there's this pressure to conform, but it's the person that doesn't, that people actually say, no, I respect that person more than the person that, you know, comes up to me and code switches, and I know that that's not the real them.
Yeah, because like I say, I am just me. And it's been certain situations where with me and some of my family, and or just me out with the coworkers, stuff like that. And if I belch, I belch, because you know, I just keep on trucking. And people be like, Karen, I'm like, nigga, you burp too, like the fuck is this? Like,
yeah, I'm not talking about that exactly. I don't know. I haven't been out with you when you was just burping all over the place. I just know I'm talking about specifically like your accent and the way you carry yourself and stuff. Like there's something about it that people are more I don't know, they're drawn to it, in my opinion. And then it's also like somewhat that's it's a bit revolutionary, because you know, so much of our shit is, you know, put on this type of makeup, wear your hair like this, put these heels on, you know, all this shit, you know, I mean. And so to have somebody kind of be like, I'm not worried about that, and it's not I'm judging you for nothing.
Nope,
it's just
judging.
This is me, and I'm just comfortable with this, you know, there's something to it that I think people are attracted to. And I think it's, you know, it's against all of the things that black people call respectability. And even the people that claim to be anti-respectability, they don't carry themselves like that. You know, they still have some things that they acquiesce to because they are worried about how they're perceived all the time. And, I don't know, I just think that that's, it just, that part just reminds me of you.
Yeah, and to an extent that makes sense, because like, that's the thing, I come from a non-judgmental place, and I think very, very, people have a tendency to pick up people that are judgmental, like, it's just something about you that makes people feel judged, but I'm like, no, I'm here, you here, wherever you are, I'm fine with wherever you are, and I'm not here to judge, I'm not here to put you in a box, you know, I'm not trying to figure you out, you know, I'm not trying to get nothing out of you, we're just here in whatever the situation is.
Yeah, so, alright, let's get into the news. I know there's a lot of stuff going on, and people have heard enough reading. Butterflies in the sky, I can go twice as high, take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere, friends to know and ways to grow, a reading rainbow. I can be anything, take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow,
a reading rainbow,
a reading rainbow. All right, Amanda Seals will join The Real as the fifth co-host.
Good for her.
She guest co-hosted on the show for a while, and they loved her. She really connected with the audience, as a source from the Jasmine brand. She will finally fill the fifth co-host spot left vacant by the singer Tamara Braxton, who left the show in 2017. Since that time, the producers at The Real have used open seats for various celebrity guests. Show producers are reportedly excited to be bringing in Seals, who is extremely outspoken to diversify the points of views expressed on the show, with the source adding, everyone is really excited about her coming on.
She's probably gonna fit right in and keep it trucking.
Or she won't fit in.
Yep.
And that's the point.
We'll get snippets of her on YouTube.
That's the point. I think they probably looked at her and all the controversy she's been involved in, and all the things that she's constantly saying on Instagram and and her podcast, and they said, look, this shit goes viral.
Yep, we gotta get views.
We see Meghan McCain on The View.
Yes, sir.
Every day there's a clip of that shit going viral because she says something that everybody don't agree with, and it gets contentious, and guess what? People click it, people log it, tune in, and I think they're looking at that model because that's the one that works. Nobody shares clips of The View when The View is not being stupid or having some petulant ass contrarian on the staff, so.
Nope. They was like, whoever we picked, they got to be problematic because y'all get along too well, apparently.
Yeah, so I can see this working big time for them.
Yeah, that's why I said she'll fit right. Either way, she'll fit right in. She'll fit right in and go to the floor. She'll fit right in as far as being problematic, and that's what they want. So either way, it's a win-win for them.
She keep a job, man.
Come on.
She going to get to the money. Okay, Amanda Seals gets to the money. Y'all cannot like her, but it seemed like not liking her ain't stopped her from getting a goddamn thing.
Mm-mm, they still signed it, so no such thing as canceled.
Like, I think on Twitter this morning, she was talking about colorism or something or whatever, and people was bringing it up for some reason. I have no idea what was going on because I didn't want to get to the bottom of that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, she stayed trending. I mean, I can't even keep up with what's the newest thing.
That's probably how she caught their eye.
Like, once every 2 weeks, she trending about something she done said to somebody about something.
Mm-hmm. She's gonna be talking about him on the podcast. It's gonna be lit.
Yeah, I don't know if she spoke on that Kenya Barris shit or what. I saw Kenya Barris they found the cast for his new show on Netflix, which is kind of like Blackish, except I think it stars him. So it's like another show about his life with like a family kind of sitcom or centered around this dude that just made it into, you know, upper class blackness and da 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 da. And everybody in the cast that he cast with him, I think it was mostly women, if not all women, and they were all like fair to light skin, like brown to light skin. And so people was like, this colorism, and you know, you've been dealing with, like, your show, you got Mixed-ish, which is obviously gonna have light-skinned people on it, but then Black-ish has mostly a lighter cast, and so you got people that was, you know, going in on him on Twitter, and he tweeted something about, like, colorism is a tool used by the powerful to divide the powerful or something. I don't know. Of course he got roasted. Yeah, it was just, I don't know if she spoke on that, and that's why she was trending and talking about being light-skinned this morning or not. It was just like light-skinned drama.
I don't know.
You know.
Y'all can have that.
Yeah, man, light-skinned people drama. I don't know much about it.
I don't know
it.
Nothing about that.
Aldi issues a plea for vulnerable people to come and collect free food on Christmas Eve. German discounter Aldi has pledged to give all of its unsold fresh food to charity after the stores close on Christmas Eve. Now, to me, this is a good reason to not go to Aldi on Christmas Eve. That way they have even more unsold food.
Yes.
And then more people can get it for free.
Yeah, and the thing is, Aldi's had to grow on me, because Aldi's ain't always been down here. It's been like Harris Teeter, Food Lion, you know, Winn-Dixie, Bilo, and stuff like that. So Aldi's was different, because I had to get used to putting a quarter in the buggy. I was like, the fuck is this? But I'm a little bit more used to that now. And they don't give out bags and shit. I had to get used to that, too.
I've never gone to Aldi's.
Oh, you haven't?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Yeah, I had to get used to that, because I know Not Chime and Funny, the quarter thing was the thing they did up north. So I went up there. I was like, I'm not giving y'all no goddamn quarter. Because who has the quarter?
What does the quarter do?
To release the buggies, because they actually chain the buggies up to each other. And they're the only grocery chain that does that. Everybody else, you literally can pull the buggy and keep it trucking.
Oh.
But for there, you actually put a quarter in. When you put a quarter in, it releases it. And then you put your quarter in, it gives your quarter back. But my thing is, I don't never have a quarter on me.
And then you got to bring your own bags, or they give you bags, or what? Oh, you got to buy them?
I think they could do boxes. They have like these big boxes they do. And I think you can purchase bags or bring your own bags. It was like really different when I first went in there, because I was like, the fuck is this?
Okay.
Cool. I'm sorry. I was conditioned to the down south. We didn't have to do that.
Good for them. Let's see what else happened. U.S. officials removed Black Panther's Wakanda from list of trading partners.
Why?
Because it don't exist. Goddamn Trump.
That's what I said. Why? Just keep it on there.
Why was it even on there in the first place? A Google search will show you the shit is crazy.
Why that vibranium drop?
Was he somewhere? Market? He was somewhere like, okay, this one's not a shithole country. I saw the movie.
All that technology, we got to get a hold of it.
Yeah, until Wednesday, the made-up East African country was listed on the drop-down menu for the Agricultural Department's Foreign Agricultural Services Tariff Tracker, along with Colombia, Costa Rica, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Panama and Peru. The department said the comic book country was added to a system while it was conducting testing. Over the past few weeks, the Foreign Agricultural Service staff who maintain the tariff tracker have been using test files to ensure that the system is running properly.
Oh, so they just make up names sometimes?
The Wakanda information should have been removed after testing and has now been taken down.
So they just make up names, but whoever was supposed to be sure it was up to date didn't do their job.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Are you sure? Are you sure? He was just like, leave it in there.
Maybe Wakanda exists, and they're trying to hide it from us.
They are trying to let me know where it is. I want my Wakanda passport.
I wouldn't blame them. Trying not to let us go home. Why introduce all this into your life?
Right, you fuck around and get what you want. Nothing but white folks out there.
Democrats introduced bill to study the impact of sex trafficking law. A group of Democrats, including Elizabeth Warren, on Tuesday introduced a bill to study the effects of a recent sex trafficking law on the health and safety of sex workers in the U.S. The Safe Sex Worker Study Act, which calls for the government to conduct a wide-ranging study into the experiences of sex workers, emerges in response to evidence that a sex trafficking bill signed into law last year has dismantled vital online ecosystems for people engaged in consensual and often life-sustaining work in the sex industry. The controversial bill, dubbed SESTA, Sesta Foster made it easier to target websites with legal action for enabling sex trafficking online, but it also effectively cut off services that allow sex workers to communicate and organize online. As lawmakers, we are responsible for examining the unintended consequences of all legislation, and that includes any impact Sesta Foster may have had on the ability of sex workers to protect themselves from physical and financial abuse, Warren said, who has faced criticism over some of her previous positions on sex work. The legislation was introduced by Warren Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat, California, who represents Silicon Valley. Barbara Lee and Ron Wyden helped write the original statute of Sesta Foster that it diluted, I guess. Warren is the only co-sponsor who voted for Sesta Foster last year. Yeah, because you're not gonna get the way shit is now, you're not gonna get these politicians to fucking admit they were wrong or admit this shit. And Warren's doing it probably because she's running for president, and the people on Twitter have told her this is a big deal, and she's one of the few politicians that's actually really listening to Twitter.
Yeah, most of them don't care.
Khanna and Lee and Wyden all voted no on the legislation over a variety of concerns about whether it will harm free speech online and result in discrimination against sex workers. Warren is co-introducing the bill as she continues to face scrutiny from sex workers over a number of issues, including her reluctance to call for decriminalizing sex work and a piece of legislation she co-sponsored in 2017 that critics say would enable banks to discriminate against sex workers. Yeah.
Yeah, that bank stuff is some bullshit.
It's also kind of interesting because Biden and Sanders don't even really have to answer to this at all. Like, I don't even know their track record on these things, or
people ain't asking
if anyone cares.
They don't.
Wow. It's always the most liberal person that gets kind of pushed on these things because they've shown some capacity to care, but then it turns into an albatross around their neck, and then it becomes a thing where people who, well, this is their issue, their main issue, they are pushing so hard on like one or two candidates that, you know, would be willing to hear them out and possibly be willing to do something about it, that it's almost like they become eroded by negative will immediately, right? And so they can't turn it around. So even with her and this study being like, okay, let's look at the impact, people are saying that this is actually a bad thing, it's not going to stop sex trafficking, it's going to exacerbate it, it's been a year, let's go ahead and study it and see what the conclusions were, because so much of this stuff is political theory, even when it's bad, right? Even when it doesn't work out. But I wonder if it's too late for her to even, you know, no matter what comes of this, if it's too late, because people are like, I've been talking shit about your ass for a year, I'm not coming off of what I said, fuck you.
Nope. And then, you know, a lot of people have that philosophy, which is very frustrating. I understand, you know, keep that same energy and all this and all that, but you know, sometimes it gets to the point where it's not realistic. And yeah, you know, you almost to the point where you're a caricature.
Okay. What caricature yourself?
Yeah, caricature. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, because yeah, it's to the point where it's like, you're so woke that you're stupid. Like this does not make sense. I understand you pushing your issues. I understand you pushing your points, but it's like this anger needs to be at everybody. But they, like you said, they focus on one or two and don't hold these other people up to the same standards.
Yeah, my question then becomes, what happens when the person does listen? Because I think that's the stage that seems to be the most. It doesn't happen as often, but when it does happen, it seems like no one's prepared for it. And
they're not.
Elizabeth Warren shows that she listens to people, and not just in this instance, but in several other instances. And I think, to me, that's why I think she's such a great candidate, is not because she's some mistake-free, never fucked up person, which is, you know, I still go back to Obama spoiled a lot of people who they won't realize it for years. It'll be, some of them will die and they won't realize they were spoiled by Obama, just because he was young, energetic, hip, and he didn't really have a track record to go, well, you're wrong about this and you're wrong about that. But you know, when you're fucking 73, the only thing you got is a track record.
Yep.
And you're not gonna be right at every stage of your life at 73. You're not gonna have 2019 ideals for the entirety of your life. At some point, you know, it's gonna be some shit people go, well, you compromised on this, or you picked wrong in this thing, right? Anyway, I do think that I prefer the realism of somebody who's like, okay, I thought that this was a thing that would protect sex workers and women from sex trafficking and stuff, and people are telling me I'm wrong. Let's study it, let's find out, and if I'm wrong, then let's change that law, you know, let's take it off the bit, let's like find another way. And I think stuff like this study are the first steps for actual change. You know, the same thing happened with reparations. They're now studying reparations and the impact, but you have to study the impact of how much economically slavery has cost people, and racism has cost you after that, and Jim Crow, and right. You know, so you have to study these things to have an answer, because if not, then we're just like that, like we're even less prepared to have an answer and to have legislation than we are after a study, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's like someone coming up to you and saying, what do you think about marriage, and someone saying, I would like to go shopping for a ring. Like, one of the, like, I'm gonna look at my finances and see what kind of ring I can afford. There's still a step further than just the theory of one day maybe we can talk about it, you know?
Agreed.
Anyway, we'll see what happens with this. I think people will come at her probably and say she's a hypocrite for changing her mind, or for, you know, saying, well, now I want to look at it, and they'll go, you didn't listen to us in the first place. But I think they'll be missing the bigger point, which is she's willing to listen now, and not just that, but she, you know, they're putting a study together to get definitive answers.
But sometimes it's very frustrating, because you individual, you grow, you change, you evolve, you make mistakes, learn from your mistakes, and politicians do it the same way too. But it's like they're not allowed to go through that in front of us. It's like, you know, this goes completely against human nature. So that's why I say, you know, and it's not to dismiss, and it's not to write off. I understand. The people pushing need to push, but sometimes I'll go, y'all motherfuckers are stupid. Like, what the arguments make no sense. They made a mistake, they fucked up. Okay, they're actually correcting it. And I understand you being mad because of the outcome, but just like you didn't know the outcome, they didn't know the outcome. Because like I said on the show yesterday, the X factor is human being behavior. Like, you putting these laws on human beings, and sometimes you do not know how they're going to respond. And when they respond a certain way, you go, let's study, let's test, let's see what the numbers do, and let's grow. Our laws allow us to amend, to change, to revoke. Like, this goes along with what you say you want, but do you really want it, or do you just want to complain some of them? Because they're actually doing the thing that the system was designed to do.
Yeah, some of them are. You know, I just think people are impatient, and you're going to be impatient when something's impacting you. You know, we have our own issues that I'm sure they'll come up at some point on this show, where it's like, I don't want y'all to study this. We do it all the time. We
agree.
The results of this study, it's like, we've been new. So if for people in the sex worker industry, they feel that way.
Agree.
Like, I've been new. I don't really, like, I'm mad. And that anger is fine. But like I said, I don't know that, I think we get so used to being angry when someone does broach toward, when someone listens to us, it's like we can't stop being angry. And I think that's a real issue and a hurdle for a lot of people who are either marginalized, oppressed, or dealing with whatever type of shit. It's something that we never consider, because we're so in the other side of things now, where people say all your anger is valid, your emotions come first, don't tone police me, you know. We're so over there now that it's like, but is it productive? Which is the number one question to me. And it's like, many times the anger isn't productive when someone does start listening to you and you're still yelling in their face, and they go, okay, now you just sound crazy, and I don't know how to deal.
Right. And that's my point. It's okay to be angry. It's okay for these feelings. And yes, your feelings are valid, because like you said, I have topics too that I'm like that on. But at the same time, I go, okay, you're angry. Now what? What do you do? Yeah. Now what? Where do you go? Are you looking in the resources to change it? Are you connecting with people? Like, okay, now what? Or do you just like to stay in the state of anger? There is a difference.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. So we'll see, man. Like I said, I haven't seen the response to this necessarily. I've seen a few people say it was good. I remember I posted on Facebook, and then like one of the I'll just say good because it is good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then some, one of the responses was like, people, you know, this is terrible. People hate these laws and da da da. And I'm like, right, that's why they're doing the study. And
right, they do need numbers, you know, and statistics,
you know. But I think, like you said, people like to go back to when they were mad or whatever, and then you can't get past that,
right?
But
because
a person isn't the sum of their shortcomings, and you can't make people stay there. Like, no matter how much you want to control the narrative, if someone's trying to progress, there's a lot of us out here willing to watch it and give them credit for it and hopefully bring them along,
right? And also, your feelings does not equal statistics. Feelings in certain situations do not equal facts.
Yeah, because anecdotally you might feel a way,
right?
But the numbers help,
right? They help, yeah, validate your feelings. So now I felt this way, I see the numbers validate how I feel, so now I can take these numbers and actually push the things that I want to push, right, based off of these facts, but not just based off of how I feel,
right? But of course it's easy to say that when you're distant from something.
Agreed.
Like, we're not sex workers, so
right,
our friend didn't die because of this law.
So
you're gonna have people that's gonna not be able to just look at it like, you know, okay, well, let's do a study and we'll see. Some people are looking at this shit like, man, fuck you, I told you what would happen, this is what happened, people ain't here no more, people been in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to hear the shit. But my thing is, those people kind of can't be involved in the process then after a certain point, because at some point it is going to be a code thing. And this is not something I say just about sex work, I say this about shit that affects me.
All right,
I say this about race shit. There's sometimes, mm-hmm, where I'm like, I'm too emotional to fucking be in this room.
All right, I got to go
when y'all do the calculations of my life, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I totally get it, man, but I think that's a step in the right direction. And, you know,
agreed.
Hopefully one year from all this, we can, you know, 1 year and distant from all this, we can look back and be like, good, we fucking decriminalized sex work and started, you know, protecting people in a way that works.
That's my goal one day, because it's fucking ridiculous. Because the thing is, once you decriminalize it and you actually simplify and allow things to be in place where you have two consensual adults and things like that, all this child sex ring, you can actually eliminate a lot of that shit, or either, you know, you can actually put more effort into them versus two consensual grown as adults.
Yeah, and even with all that stuff with sex work, like, you still gonna end up with some outliers, and you're gonna end up with some people that's still not happy, and there's gonna be people that, you know, don't like it when it is regulated. Like, it's gonna always be some, you're talking about big solutions to things that are never gonna be one size fits all, you know.
Agreed.
So it's gonna always be inadequate to someone, but I just know what they're doing right now is inadequate to everyone.
Yes.
Energy drinks increase stroke risk by 500% as a regular heartbeat sore.
What type of energy drinks? Just all of them?
Energy drinks could increase a person's risk of having a stroke by 500%, as addictions are causing a rise in the regular heartbeats, claim experts.
Oh, they're talking about them 5-hour energy things?
Yes, Karen.
Okay.
Shocking figures from the British Soft Drinks Association reveal the volume of energy drinks consumed in the UK increased from 463 million liters in 2010 to 679 million liters in 2017. The UK market for energy drinks is now worth a staggering £2 billion a year. It is thought the rise in the energy drink consumption is linked to the rise in arrhythmia and an abnormal heart rhythm, which increases the risk of stroke fivefold.
Wow, because I've never had one. I never wanted one. I remember when I used to waitress years ago, some of those servers would like do double shifts and triple shifts and shit like that, and they would do those things and they would talk about how they would feel. They would talk about how, you know, they would feel like their heart skipping. I was like, I'm not doing that bullshit, no.
Yeah, I had a coworker that used to drink them when he went clubbing and stuff, and then he would be up all night and get no sleep, and then come into work and
right,
be tired as fuck. And it used to really bother me on Fridays when we had to do like the payroll check run and all this type of shit, because his ass would be damn near sleeping. I'm in the room fucking manually doing these checks by almost by myself,
right?
But yes, it's crazy. It says the stimulus containing caffeine can trigger this arrhythmia. 6 or 7 coffees a day could do it, but these energy drinks carry a really high risk. Mark Horseman, 52, spoke about the terrifying experience of arrhythmia, which left him thinking he was about to die. The construction manager from Brighton consumed around 8 cups of coffee a day and 3 cans of Red Bull to keep him going. Good After God. Downing 2 cans of Red Bull in a row, he described how he felt a booming sound and beat coming from his heart. He said, "It was absolutely terrifying. My heart was beating very fast, then would miss a beat, and then it would boom." A GP diagnosed Mark with an extra or ectopic heartbeat as a result of his excessive caffeine and energy drink habit. Mark immediately cut out all energy drinks of caffeine, and he said he thinks the drinks should be banned.
And also, we live in a world now, and I can speak for Americans, where work, you know, Americans, we take the least amount of time off of work. We have PTO time. We giving fucking companies back every year that expires. Mm-hmm. And so people are literally working themselves 50, 60, 70, 80. Some people over 100 hours a week. You're not sleeping. A lot of people have sleep deprivation problems. A lot of people, they have insomnia problems where they're up half of the night and they can't sleep. So a lot of times when these things happen, they take this as substitute to help them function through the day. It is not healthy, and it is pushed towards us like, you're feeling tired. Sometimes there might be other factors. It might be diet, it might be your lack of water, it might be other factors that are causing
lack of sleep.
Yeah, some people don't sleep, and so you do these things as substitute sometimes just from flat sleeping. You know, a lot of people, you know, I sleep when I'm dead. No, bitch, I'm sleeping now.
Yeah, what I think is interesting is we were just coming off of like a week or two ago talking about Lizzo, and then everybody starts doing the fake like, I care about your health type stuff, because of course all fat people are unhealthy, blah blah blah. But then something like energy drink consumption, you can't look at somebody and be like, they drink 2 Red Bulls a day.
Mm-mm.
You know, and they could literally be 500 times risk of stroke. We're not talking about banning these drinks.
Mm-mm.
We're not talking about regulating the drinks. We're not putting warnings on the commercials.
They don't.
No one's concerned about this shit, because you can drink an energy drink and you don't look fat,
right?
So that's it. But that's the first thing it made me think about, was like, damn, if, you know, people be like, if being fat causes any level of health risk, no one should be fat. But then,
right,
if you need to drink a Red Bull to go to the gym, hey, that's just a thing that's fine. You going to the gym or whatever. So
yeah, those things aren't FDA approved, are they?
I'm sure they are.
Okay.
Though, I mean, at least in America, they probably gotta be.
That's true.
I mean,
don't mean it's good for you, but yeah.
As FDA approved as coffee or, you know, whatever, Mountain Dew, you know. Let's see what else happens. Harvey Weinstein reached a $25 million deal with sexual assault accusers. Now, this does not mean that nothing criminal will happen to him.
Mm-mm.
Because there are a couple people who were not involved in this settlement who still have separate lawsuits against him and stuff.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, he paid $25 million. The settlement would essentially bring an end to every lawsuit against him and his former company, pending a court approval and final sign off by all parties. But Weinstein himself won't be footing the bill. Instead, the $25 million of reparations would be paid by various insurance companies representing the now bankrupt Weinstein company.
Yeah, that rape insurance we were talking about before, they got to pay that shit out.
The question I have is, if the company's bankrupt, oh wait, no, they'll get it. Yeah, their $25 million settlement will be part of an overall $47 million settlement to close out all the company's remaining obligations, so they will get their money.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, and this is the truth, man. Like, a lot of times when it's these rich, powerful people, you gotta settle for money because you ain't getting justice.
Nope.
You know, they can tie your ass up in the courts for years and years and years. They can disrupt your life. They can, you know, because
you end up going fucking bankrupt.
Especially in trials like this, they put you on the stand, essentially.
Right.
Like, they start talking about your sexual history, trying to find every embarrassing thing about you and all this stuff. And yeah, I could kind of see how you know, you, especially as a group, you'd be like, let's just take the fucking money and leave it at that, and you know, hopefully someone else gets them. Now the question I do wonder about is, does this open up the Bill Cosby type thing where they're not allowed to testify in another person's trial?
Probably so. Because if so,
then the only way to get them to testify would be if he violates the NDA or something like that, or comes out and claims his innocence and all this shit. So we'll see. With these rich, powerful men, you never know, because sometimes they give, you know, this really didn't cost him any money.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, a lot of times they'll come out and say something stupid later, and then we all go into court. So
we'll see, because believe you me, all them people's lawyers and even them gonna be watching everything he does. If he cracks up, oh, it's gonna be on the pop, and they go, I got your money and I'm testifying.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with that. Let's see. An employer's patience test goes viral for all the wrong reasons. Apparently, this is just this, the long and short of it. There was a story where based on a real life story, a man named Mr. Doubles told his followers the story of a boss testing candidate's patience by making them wait almost 12 hours for an interview. According to the story, six candidates came for an interview at 7 a.m. They were asked to wait. By 3 p.m., only three were left. And then by 6 p.m., when the employer finally came to see them, there were only two, and they both got the job. Hey, man, this ain't Hogwarts.
The fuck is this? No, I got shit to do.
Yeah, well, the other people were in situations where they couldn't wait 12 fucking hours on a whim of you, who could have done this at any time and decided, I'm fucking with people today.
That's why you scheduled this shit, so you can get people in and out. Don't you want to schedule as many people as possible so to be sure you get the best candidate?
Yeah, the test was the interview, a test of patience.
Patience my ass, you an asshole.
What if the two people that were there were the dumbest people because they had nothing else to do, because nobody can depend on them for shit? Like, what does that have? What does that mean?
Yeah, you get them in there and they're the worst for the job.
That's so stupid, man. I hope there that's not go. True.
Agreed.
Nearly 700,000 people will lose food stamps with the USDA work requirement change.
That sound about right.
The Trump administration's rule change will limit states' abilities to provide residents access to food stamps. It was on the ballot. Trump administration Wednesday formalized work requirements for recipients of food stamps, a move that will cause hundreds of thousands of people to lose access to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Agricultural Secretary Sonny Perdue and Brandon Lips, the Deputy Undersecretary for the USDA's Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, spent about 18 minutes on a call with reporters outlining the changes to the rule that will take effect April 1st. We're taking action to reform our SNAP program in order to restore the dignity of work to a sizable segment of our population and be respectful of the taxpayers who fund the program.
So you think people on SNAP don't want to fucking work?
Right, or don't work already?
Right, they're working poor.
But this is the Republican idea of poverty. This is the Republican idea of what capitalism is. It's why capitalism is so fucked up, is that, well, the assumption is everything is lotted out based on merit. So if people are at the top, they're obviously the most meritable people. They're the best. And the people at the bottom, they're obviously the worst. And they have the worst habits, and it's all their fault. And this is what happens when you buy into that mentality.
Right.
Americans are generous people who believe it is their responsibility to help their fellow citizens when they encounter a difficult stretch. That's the commitment behind SNAP. But like other welfare programs, it was never intended to be a way of life. They always say that. The USDA,
even though most people aren't on it for life, most right. Average person needs just a little bit of help, but they don't want to give you a little bit of help. They just like, you either need to have nothing or either you don't qualify for shit.
The USDA rule change affects people between the ages of 18 and 49 who are childless and not disabled. Under current rules, this group is required to work at least 20 hours a week, but more than 3 months over a 36-month period to qualify for food stamps. But states have been able to create waivers for areas that face high unemployment.
Right, which means they can't get jobs because the jobs ain't there and the people cannot afford to just move.
The new rule would limit states from waiving those standards, instead restricting their use to those areas that have a 6% unemployment rate or higher. The national unemployment rate in October was 3.6%. During the call Wednesday, the USDA said that about 688,000 people would lose access to food stamps. That's down from its earlier estimate of 750,000 people. The USDA said that this was an extension of the President Donald Trump's April 2018 executive order called Reducing Poverty in America by Promoting Opportunity and Economic Mobility.
So it's the bill always, is the fucking opposite of what the hell they talking about. Just like them family love first shit be like, nah, we don't give a fuck about your family, but we're gonna put it on there like we family love first.
Right. They always do that. A million moms is really like three dudes in Iowa, you know?
Yeah, like somebody say, they do no crime will go up. These people don't disappear just because you don't feed them.
The way they name the programs is so funny too, because it's always like, yeah, we're gonna cut HIV prevention. We're gonna cut HIV prevention education in schools and in the clinics. And what are we gonna call the act? The HIV education through life experience bill. It's like, well, wait, aren't you just saying that people are gonna end up getting HIV and that's how they're gonna learn their lesson?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we just think, you know, we want to give them the dignity of HIV. That's all. Like, that's the way they treat the shit, is like, we'll just do the opposite thing that we just the Family Keep Them Together Act. Well, what is that? Well, we just gonna cut everybody who is on government assistance that the family, if you don't have both people in the house with a job, we're gonna make those families be apart. So we're gonna kick the man out of the house unless he gets a job, but if he gets a job, he can stay, you know, like something like that. And you're like, mm-hmm. that program is the opposite of what you just called it,
right?
Anyway, reducing poverty in America by promoting, wow.
Yeah, like you say, these areas of the country where the unemployment rate is through the roof. In certain cities, like the state might be fine, but certain populations, particularly places where a lot of the mills shut down where everybody worked there, a lot of the car plants shut down where everybody worked there, you know, they moving these jobs out of the country, like that shit matters. So now you have these people that, like you say, they're childless. Like, that's the thing too. I realized this years ago, you ain't got no kids, it's a real big fuck you. Like, and that's how they quote unquote push people into having children they don't want sometimes, because they're like, well, look, only way we're gonna be able to help you or give you anything decent, you got to have kids, because even with this, you don't even stay on it the whole time. It's, you get it so many months out of the year.
Well, you know, it's that economic anxiety that makes them vote for Trump, which is then why he turns around and saves the country $5.5 billion over 5 years, according to the government. Woo! Saving that money. Now, if you're keeping up with that tax cut he gave us last year, it's not actually going to save us anything.
No, it's not. In fact, the working population is actually paying more in taxes, and the people and the companies making the bazillion dollars is actually paying less, and they are the people that actually need to fund more, because they are like the corporations and shit that actually don't give a fuck about people, that's cutting people hours out here in Walmart, be like, you know, instead of paying you the time and a half, here's a gift card to spend money back here, bitch, no, pay me.
Yep. Let's see, a man fatally shoots his sister on Thanksgiving after she unfriended him on Facebook.
Oh, that's a little too seriously.
Well, this is what people encourage people to do. I've seen the tweets and the Facebook statuses. You know, tell your uncle that's Make America Great Again, blah, 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 Thanksgiving. You know, don't be claiming to be my friend and then you friends cause with your uncle that got da-da-da-da and then they unfriend the motherfucker and now they dead. And not a cookie is in sight for any allies, okay? They just dead. A family in Alaska has been left devastated in the wake of a deadly Thanksgiving shooting that left a 23-year-old woman dead and her older brother charged with a murder. 27-year-old Moses Tony Crow last week was arrested after he allegedly shot his younger sister Amanda Rose Owen on Thanksgiving Day. Shooting stemmed from her decision to unfriend him on Facebook. Tragedy unfolded once authorities received two 911 calls, the first from Owen's uncle, the second from Crow's grandmother. Owen's uncle said that he heard a pop while cooking the family's holiday meal and later discovered that what he believed to be his niece suffered from a bullet wound as a result of an accidental shooting at the time. He reported she was unconscious but breathing. However, Crow's grandmother witnessed the shooting and detailed the incident to authorities, refuting the claim that the shooting was accidental. She claimed that as she was sitting on her bed speaking to Owen, who was seated adjacent holding her one-year-old son, Crow entered the bedroom, visibly upset over Owen's alleged decision to unfriend or block him on Facebook. According to the grandmother, Crow then pulled a weapon from his coat, presumably a gun. Although the grandmother could not be sure what the object was at first glance, he then aimed a pistol at Owen's head and shot her while she was holding the child. Authorities responded to the scene around 3:14 p.m. Despite the grandmother's account, Crow continues to claim that the shooter was accidental, resulting in the twirling the pistol around his finger when it went off.
He shot her. I believe grandma.
Yeah, why would your grandmama lie?
I believe grandma. You was mad. You was upset. You shot her with her child in her motherfucking hands. What is wrong with you?
Let's see what else happened out here, guys.
And now we get 100. I don't care what the race is. I'm fucked with.
I hear you on that one, buddy. Matter of fact, why don't we do that then? Let's just go into fucking with black people. Even though those people weren't black, still fucked with.
Yes, still fucked with.
We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people.
That's right, guys. Time to play the game we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game we go all around the globe. We find different articles, make us feel fucked with. The wheel sign point scores 0 to 100 intervals 25. Today's contestants, everybody. And occasionally I give some hydro cars. Medical students send a message with plantation photo. We are our ancestors' wildest dreams. More than a dozen medical students from Tulane University posed at a former slave quarters in the hopes of inspiring others.
Oh,
yeah, I've seen mixed reviews of this. I've seen a lot of wokey wokes come down on these women, these black women, for doing this. Sydney Labatt, 24, and 14 of her Tulane University classmates posed at the Whitney Plantation in Wallace, Louisiana. Did y'all see the picture?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Yeah, the thing for me, is I don't have a problem with this, to be frank.
Me either.
And, I'm not saying I'm necessarily inspired by it, but I'm not sitting around like mad at them. You know, I saw people adding extra shit like, yo, ancestors' dream wasn't for you to be elitist with your degrees or some shit. I didn't pick up any elitism from it or shitting on black people by them doing this. I don't think it's the same thing as white people having weddings at plantations, because this
is
a direct
thing.
This is literally a direct acknowledgement of the atrocities that happen at plantations.
Correct.
And saying, listen, we're going into the medical field to try to change this and to try to be a fulfillment of this vision. We're using our knowledge as black women for our communities and to help people. I think being a doctor is something that is laudable. I think it's difficult.
Very.
To achieve, you know, a lot of school, a lot of stuff like that. And lastly, it is some ancestors' wildest dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Our ancestors weren't a monolith. They weren't all MLK or whatever the fuck, like, you think the wildest dreams are. Like, some people's wildest dreams was to be, I'm reading about Robert Pershing, who fucking, his lifelong thing was to be a doctor, and he was not able to fucking practice almost anywhere he went because he was black in America. He went to school, went overseas, fucking Jim Crow followed him overseas, and the fucking racist officers there wouldn't let this man be a doctor the way he was supposed to. He was delivering babies on people's kitchen floors and shit. You know, like, it's not a game. And you know, that's, and he wasn't even a slave, he was just a guy, you know, during a certain era that wanted to be a doctor. I think he was like 1950s or 60s and he was still going through that. So slave people that were slaves had even more hurdles and even, you know, dreams that probably were even quote unquote smaller to us now, but shit, at the time it was pretty fucking revolutionary. So yeah, they probably never thought they'd see a fucking black doctor. Y'all know the reason the Tuskegee experiments were really allowed to go on for so long is partially because black people couldn't get a fucking doctor. Like, just the odds of a doctor coming through and wanting to treat you as a black person, a fucking unsophisticated you know, farmer or something like that, that didn't have a lot of money, the idea of a doctor taking interest in your health was pretty much non-existent. So even with them letting the fucking effects of, I believe it was syphilis, ravage these people, and some of them dying from the causes of it, related symptoms you know, some of the things that it causes, even with that, there were black people that were happy in the Tuskegee experiments, because the idea of a doctor coming and checking on you every week, taking a sample, asking about, because they also would cure, what they would also fix and work on everything that wasn't syphilis related. Right. So like, they did give you medicine for other things, like other ailments,
cold.
And the average black person didn't even get that. Mm-mm. So these black people felt some level of privilege and luck to be involved in a fucking program that we know is a diabolical experiment. That's the level of treatment that the people were getting. And so yes, a doctor that is black, that seemingly has your best interest in mind, would be somebody's wildest dream. I don't get the anger at these women. It's like, people do some shit and then we just have to be angry all the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't get it.
Yeah, the extra wokes.
Yeah. Just thinking about being a black doctor in America, I think more people should see this. Ladette, 33, told NBC News. The second year med student first visited the site with her daughter and a friend last summer and shared the impression it made on him with classmates, Sydney Labatt and others. I came back and talked about it with Sydney and the classmates, and I said, we should go in all black in our white coats. Everybody was on board. On Saturday, 16 members of Tulane's National Medical Association made the trip from New Orleans to the former plantation, which is about 50 miles west. Get a head start on the morning's top story. Okay, that's some other shit. Seeing that many black people study, students in training, in one photo was striking. In a place that was dedicated to our ancestors and their struggles, we knew this photo was going to make people stop and really think. I can say for myself, I definitely got emotional throughout the experience. Yeah, I don't want to belittle these people. And also, if you so woke that this did nothing for you because you already thought about all this, okay, well, somebody else might be inspired by it or get more from it than you did. I don't know, it just seemed like the need to shit on these people was so strong in folks. They can't help themselves.
Yeah, that permanent place of anger.
Yeah, and I don't know how old, you know, second year med students are, but mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they not that fucking old. You know, this might inspire them and people their age and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Ladette hopes the message gets to those who feel a lack of representation in and out of the classroom. There are babies, kids in high school right now. They don't have these images in the classroom. They don't have the image of someone black in a white coat. The first thing they see is a white doctor. These kids need somebody who looks like them in an image in the classroom. That's the other thing. When does the representation matter and when does it not? Cause
right.
We went from there's not enough representation in a fucking movie, and there's not enough representation in corporate America, and there's not enough representation in this and that and this and this. So then you have some people that's like, we're gonna be black doctors that take a picture to show people, like, look at us together, look at this thing you can accomplish. Some kid may see this, they may even wonder about the significance of it being on a plantation. They right. may they may learn about things from that angle.
Right.
I just don't see how this is a bad thing necessarily. Yeah,
but I think it stems with the fact that it's a plantation, and niggas have, you know, some niggas have their things about history and plantations and shit like that. It's almost like, how can I say, not to sound, what I'm gonna say it. some niggas are like some of the white supremacists. You just want to erase fucking history. You want to erase slavery. You want to erase blackness. You want to act like that shit just never existed because it fucking made you feel bad. But you cannot erase it. It's a fact and it happened.
Yeah, so this didn't bother me at all, man. I give it a zero. I actually think it's good. And you know, the thing, like, while it might not be for me, it doesn't harm me in any way. And I'm just not one of those people that the mere mention of plantations drives me to, like, you know, to just go and, you know, like, fuck all this. But Karen's 0 to 100.
Oh, I'm not fucked with it at all. And my thing is, you know, I understand for some people this is the heavy and all that stuff, but most people don't try to erase it. But some people, like I said, they just want to erase it, act like the shit don't exist, and I have a problem with those people.
Yeah, I think also people haven't reconciled how they really feel about shit, and we have all this flowery language to cover shit up now. It's, everything's got a word, you know. Mm-hmm. It's violent. I'm triggered. It's this, it's that. And some of the shit is like you said on the show before. Sometimes it just made you feel something, and that's okay.
It's okay. It's like, alright.
Feelings are a part of life, and sometimes you're supposed to feel shit.
And that's the end.
You don't need to get a warning or a hug. Like, sometimes it's just, hey.
Sometimes life smacks you in the motherfucking face, and you got to look at it and deal with that bullshit.
And I think also just low key, I'm just so fucking sick of, like, just reflexive hating of each other. Like, they decided to do this and I'm not harmed by it. I'm okay with it. It doesn't, unless there was some statement where they were talking about how black people ain't shit, I just don't see what would make me angry about them doing this.
They're not hurting or harming nobody.
Yeah. Our hair is still an issue. Sisters banned from Black Nutcracker over braids. Yeah, this is in News One. Apparently, a Harlem mother is voicing her concerns as her two daughters were recently banned from a production of the Black Nutcracker because they chose to wear their hair in braids. PIX11 reports the 9-year-old April and 10-year-old Brooke will not be able to participate in the production, which is being put on by Uptown Dance Academy. The mother, Lisa Skinner, said that the rules of the dance company are that students must secure their hair for safety reasons. However, her daughters were apparently told that their hair cannot be in braids, even if it is placed in a bun, per the suggested safety precaution. Skinner said that the teacher and school founder, Robin Williams, also a black woman, informed her that if her daughters were to have their hair in braids, they would not be permitted to participate in the performance. They were expelled from the school because I would not adhere to this ludicrous policy. And she said to me, then I will send you a refund of your ticket purchase money, said Skinner. Her daughters, who have been attending the dance academy for 3 years, are confused as to why their hair is an issue if they are complying with the school's policy.
Right.
It's a black nutcracker. It'd be different if it were the original nutcracker, said Brooke.
Correct.
My braids, I really like them. They describe me. Her sister April also said, my hair is part of myself and myself. I was born with this type of hair. The two aspiring dancers said that they will not allow this to discourage them from pursuing what they love, which is dance. Their mother's already begun to look for another program to enroll Brooke and April in.
Yeah, it's fucked up all the way around. And I do understand the mother's perspective going, and it would still be fucked up if it was the original one. Cause odds are you probably have a majority white cast and you could see, okay, this is racism from the mama's perspective. But she going, nah, y'all black just like me. So what is the fucking problem here?
Yeah, 100.
Same.
I just don't understand how this is so fucking, I just don't understand what was the problem here.
It's not a fucking problem. They made it a problem. That's the thing. This shit is so dumb that y'all make something a problem that wasn't a motherfucking problem. It wasn't a problem with them babies having their hair. As long as they had it tied up, you know, according to whatever your rules were, what is the fucking problem?
And this is in New York where they just passed a law that you can finally not be discriminated against your hair in the workplace. But I guess at school, where we still do over police people's bodies, now we can do it. All right, let's do last one. Fucking niggers. Racist NYPD cop jailed for breaking into a black woman's home.
Straight to the point.
A drunken NYPD officer in Tennessee got a slap on the wrist after he broke into a black woman's home, calling her and her son the N-word and threatening to hurt them. Despite the egregious nature of his offense, Michael J. Reynolds was only set to spend a couple of weeks in jail for terrorizing Kenise Halliburton and her four sons in Nashville. As many horror stories start out nowadays, an Airbnb was involved. Reynolds was renting one from a friend's bachelor party in September, when, according to the Tennessean, he began kicking in the front door of Halliburton's next door, 12 South area home, and charging into the middle of the night.
So he ended the wrong place.
Yeah. Video surveillance taken from the neighbor's Ring camera shows Reynolds screaming and threatening the family and using racial slurs. After breaking in, Halliburton said that her dogs tried to bite Reynolds, but that he would not be deterred. He kept coming down the hall, she said. Nothing was holding him back. He was like, "This is my motherfucking house." Before the surveillance footage showed Reynolds threatening them with racist physical violence. "Try to shoot me and I'll break every fucking bone in your fucking neck," Reynolds says, before calling them fucking niggers. Reynolds was not arrested until days later, even though Halliburton called 911. The police arrived after the NYPD's cops' illegal, racist, and violent outburst. Despite those facts, Reynolds was sentenced to just 2 weeks in jail and 3 years probation. In classic and very privileged form, Reynolds tried to blame his racism and violence on the alcohol. Blame it on the goose. It's got you feeling loose.
Because if they would have fucking blown your head off for fucking entering their home, it all hell would have got them broke loose.
Well, you sound kind of upset over there, Karen.
I am. This don't is some it, bullshit.
Well, just keep it under control. I don't want you to give it too high a score. The Tennessean reported that the cop testified that he thought Halliburton's home was the house that he and his friends, several of whom are also NYPD cops, rented next door. Oh, okay. Well, as long as you thought it was the house you rented, you can run in there and say, "This is my fucking house, fucking niggers." I get it. It was unclear that what Reynolds' current employment status was at the NYPD. Probably a promotion. I think that's what we've learned over the years. But the Tennessean listed him as having worked patrol in Manhattan and wrote that he was suspended for 30 days from his job. And although he had been decommissioned, he was still employed at the police officer at NYPD. In New York City.
You got a 30-day vacation?
Probably. It was the latest collision of racism on Airbnb and blah, 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 blah. Karen? 0 to 100?
100.
All right. I give it a 75.
No, you give it 75.
Because why don't you give it your cars, Karen? Exactly. I only get 75s now, Karen.
No, we're not going to do this!
I decided that 75s is just... that's as high as I'm willing to go. No matter how bad the shit gets, you can call a black woman and her four sons fucking niggers, and I just 75 arbitrarily. I'm just that's what it's worth.
No, okay. okay, fine. You and JL win a fucking Jacquard.
Thank you. That's all I ever wanted.
You and JL win.
That's my Christmas present, okay?
Cause fuck that motherfucking cop. Fuck him.
Yes.
You nigga.
The car's all around.
You breaking my goddamn house. Fuck you. That's why I don't got a gun. I blow your goddamn brains out.
Yes. Blow his brains out with the fire from some dragons. It's a Christmas miracle, y'all. We finally got a Jacquard out of Karen.
Yes, fuck him.
I was wondering what the fuck I had to read.
Goddamn alcohol. Fuck you. Wrong house.
Right. Scared them people to death.
Right. And if her sons would have attacked you in any way, shape, form, or fashion, they would have gone to jail longer than you. Why is he still a fucking officer? I don't understand.
If they didn't have the fucking Ring camera video footage
recording it,
they would have been in trouble. Because, you know, it would have been their word against his. I'm Blue Lives Matter, you know. All right, y'all. Let's get into some Guess the Race. Gotta start wrapping this bad boy up.
Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time. Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time.
Ba-da-ba.
That's right, it's time for Guess the Race, the number one game show going across all the podcasts, and we read and play the New Yorkers from all over the globe. We ask our contestants today, Karen and the chat room, to guess the race. And of course, everyone listening plays along and is a racist. All right, let's check the stories and get into this one. Suspect in campus feces attacks is granted bail. A 23-year-old man accused of dumping buckets of fecal matter on people in three separate incidents last month was released on bail Wednesday afternoon after spending 3 weeks behind bars. Now, you guess you can't keep him indefinitely.
Apparently not.
Investigators previously said an unknown male walked into the University of Toronto's Robarts Library. No, wait, is this the same dude? Wait, we might have covered this already. Didn't he do this in California too?
Oh, the same person?
Hold on. Two similar incidents reported at York University Kill campus in November 24th and outside U of T building of South College Street University. This might be the same dude. I'm gonna skip this one.
Okay.
He was black, but I think that's the same. I've never seen a black man get away with this much crime.
Right?
He's dumping buckets of shit on people and just walking around.
Who's walking around?
Wow. Oh man, okay. Well, maybe just,
is that a Canada thing? I don't know. No, that happened in the States. My bad.
Put the buckets around behind glass or something, you know, so they can't bomb. St. Pete woman a St. Pete woman stabbed her boyfriend with surgical scissors while he was in a hospital bed. Jesus.
Oh no.
A St. Petersburg woman is facing a felony charge after police say she stabbed her boyfriend with surgical scissors while he was in a hospital bed. Tania D. Sherrod, 18, is charged with aggravated battery with a weapon after the incident, which occurred November 19th. An arrest report lists the address of the incident as I'm not going to their house. According to the report, Sherrod's boyfriend was in a hospital bed at around 10:30 p.m. that day. Sherrod was with him and started arguing with him over suspected infidelity. Sherrod became irate when her boyfriend wouldn't let her see his phone. She then picked up a pair of surgical scissors that were in the hospital room and began stabbing the victim in the right thigh, causing multiple puncture wounds. Sis, break up with him, okay? We do not
leave him.
This, okay?
Leave him.
Just leave him, boo.
It ain't worth it. No!
Who wanna date a man you got stabbed in the leg to see his phone? The report did not indicate why her boyfriend was in the hospital in the first place. I hope it wasn't something she did to put him in there. She was arrested December 4th, booked on felony charge of aggravated domestic battery with a deadly weapon. She's been held on $15,000 bail. A written plea of not guilty has been entered on her behalf.
But you got the staff there. You did that shit.
It's a setup. Karen, guess the race.
Black.
Karen's going with black. Let's check the chat room, see what they believe. So black. Okay. Her ancestors' wildest dreams come true. Yeah, I think those are more of her and scissors dreams. Name hard to pronounce black, paid the hospital bill with Obamacare black.
Oh, no.
Didn't learn how to spell her name till she was 10 black. And then black a bunch in a row. I think everyone went black. Everyone, you got it correct. Mm-hmm. This ain't no Grant Hill, Tania.
Apparently not.
Or is that Tamia?
I don't know.
Anyway, that's the stabber in question. Allegedly.
I don't see it yet.
Oh, it's not showing up.
At least I don't see it.
Okay.
Y'all see
it,
chat room?
Why is it saying on my screen that it's showing it? But
okay,
it's not
slow.
Oh. Okay. All right. I see it starting to try to share it. Damn! Did it go away?
Oh, no. Hold on. It's spinning.
Okay.
It's still spinning.
Okay. Well, just like them rims. Okay.
Oh, she did that. Oh no.
Yeah, she don't even look like she regret it.
Oh no. Mm-mm.
Yeah, she also don't look 18. I think y'all might need to check the birth certificate. Mm-mm. That is a 35-year-old woman stabbing that man. Okay,
she fucked him up,
man. Can't believe that. I just can't picture my, I don't know. I hope I never have to be in no relationship that feel that bad. Well, I'm like, I guess stabbing somebody is a reasonable thing to do right now. This would make total sense. This is a healthy relationship.
100% healthy.
Risk my freedom. A Connecticut principal slapped elderly man in a parking lot spat.
What?
Guess she had to teach him a lesson. A Connecticut principal slapped an elderly man several times during a parking lot squabble. Coley Town Middle School principal Chris Zabo, 49, was busted November 27th after a 71-year-old man told police she struck him multiple times when he confronted her for leaving her car in a no parking zone. Oh my God.
You couldn't have called the tow people and just said, "Towa, what the fuck is this?"
Well, Karen, I guess it was just the principle of the matter.
That one's good. That's good. Nope.
Thank you. she hit the man. Witnesses said she hit the man 3 or 4 times. Zabo, a veteran educator of more than 25 years, was placed on administrative leave from her post on Wednesday, one day after the local outlets reported on her arrest. Please note that the safety of our students remains top priority. I mean, y'all ain't got no 71-year-old students. They should be straight. As long as they mind their business about where people park. District said the incident remains under investigation. Zabo has hired was hired as a school principal in 2004 and had been working at Bedford as extensive renovations continued on Coley Town. She was charged a second degree breach of peace and has been released at the post of $500 bond. Karen, guess the race.
I'm gonna go black.
Karen's going with black. Let's check the chat room and see what you guys believe. Attended the Joe Clark School of Education Administration.
Oh,
you would give me the goddamn respect you would. All right, that parking rage white, home for Christmas white, black white, very divided the chat room is today. Chalky white, white. Wow, you guys are as divided as Trump's America today. The correct winter white. Okay, a lot of whites to end it. The correct answer is Kara said black. And the correct answer is white.
Oh.
I guess in your own anti-blackness, you believe principal black women go around just slapping old men.
Apparently.
Mm-mm-mm, Karen. We really need to examine our ancestors' wildest dreams today, okay? Just know in a few generations, if somebody's like, "I am my ancestors' wildest dreams," they not talking about me. Because my wildest dream was getting chased by a sentient piece of pizza through an amusement park when I was 11 years old. Okay? I fell off the top of the top of the ride. So, you're not my wildest dream unless you can make that happen. Anyway, many of you got it right. Let's go to the bonus round.
Double the points and the race. Double the points and the race.
That's right. Double the points, double the race, and the bonus round against the race. So far, Karen is 1-1.
1-1, 50%.
But can she finish off strong? I don't know, guys. I guess we'll all find out together.
We will.
A Florida man shoots at a coworker's mother over a sandwich order.
Ooh, what kind of sandwich? What kind of meat was it?
Florida man. Well, sounds like to me, it was beef. A Florida man was arrested Sunday over reports that he allegedly shot at his coworker's mom last month because of a sandwich order. Destin N. Garcia II, 18, was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon for a November 30th shooting at a home near Green Acres, the place to be. According to the report, on November 29th, Garcia and a coworker were working at the Subway inside of Palm Springs Walmart, where a promotion for a free sandwich was being offered to store employees.
Okay.
Garcia allegedly told the police he became upset with his coworker when she made a rap for a Walmart manager and then ignored him when he told her that he needed to pay the difference since the promotion was for subs only. The following day, around 9 a.m., Garcia allegedly went to his coworker's home.
What?
Well, you know, Karen, these sandwich artists are temperamental, okay? They are artists and they are serious about their shit. He shoved her mother and refused to leave when asked by the homeowner for the 69 cent difference. Like, what? This is the worst PR for Subway since Jared. That's when he took out a handgun and fired at the woman's feet, missing her.
What?
He took off but was arrested 2 weeks later. 2 weeks.
This sandwich had a lot of plot holes in it.
It did. Was he coming home?
I don't know.
How was he on the run for 2 weeks?
How did you get my address?
He didn't come back to work no more. He was booked Sunday on a count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon without the intent to kill and one count of battery.
Without? Yeah. He put a fucking gun on me. Your attempting was to kill me.
Meanwhile, they threw that black woman in jail who had that domestic violence against her. She shot in the ceiling. And they put her in jail. Same state.
Forever.
He is currently being held at Palm Beach County Jail for $100,000 bond. Karen, guess the race.
Oh, white.
Karen's going with white. Let's check the chat room and see what you guys believe his race is. Another Floridian, white, says Miss Barnes. Hispanic, Latinx, Hispanic artists. He fled to Mexico for 2 weeks. Latinx. A lot of Latinx coming in. All the mayo, white. Should have gone to Arby's because they have all the meats. Latinx. El Pollo Loco. The correct answer is Karen went with white. And Karen, you got it correct. He was white. Which means a lot of y'all missed it. That's a lot of stress over a sandwich.
Come on.
Like, I gotta deal with this shit, man. We make $4.55 an hour. What are you doing?
What are you, and you show up at my goddamn house? What's wrong with you?
You gotta charge an extra 3 cents. No. Imagine if you worked at McDonald's and people was giving away right. these hot mustards.
It was actually benefiting you not to charge you. You was like, I'm gonna pay you this motherfucking money.
No. It was a manager of a Walmart that she didn't charge the extra money. He's not a, he worked at Subway with her.
Oh.
So he was mad.
It ain't no motherfucking money. Your name ain't Mr. Subway. What the hell is this?
Right.
Who gives a goddamn?
He related to Jared Fogle.
She probably been running that order all goddamn day. She was like, fuck it. You can have it. Who cares?
All right. A man with a sword was arrested after a verbal conflict. Victoria police arrested a man in possession of a sword outside the West Village Save On Foods just around 6 p.m. Wednesday.
That's Save On.
Police have responded to a verbal disagreement at the Vic West location when the sword was found. The man did not pull the sword out and was compliant when being arrested. He was subsequently transported to the West Shore RCMP detachment because of a warrant in their jurisdiction. And that's the sword ratchetness of the day. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
We'll be back. Appreciate y'all.
We will.
Until next time, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.